The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Donald Trump is running out of time to find $464 million.
The former president's legal problems may finally be catching up with him.
Could this be the beginning of the end for Trump's business empire?
It does seem as though we are getting closer.
Trump feeling the walls closing in on him. Panic mode, I'm told, is setting in.
I think we're going to be writing a version of an obituary of the Trump organization.
Moments ago, the former president got a financial lifeline from a New York appeals court. It reduced the bond he must pay in the civil fraud case from more than $450 million to $175 million and gave him more time to pay for it.
The recent merger of Truth Social could net the former president some $3 billion.
On the same day his bond was slashed in half, Trump Social's parent company, Truth Social, their stock soared 35%, giving Trump a $4 billion cash injection. Trump's net worth just hit $6.5 billion on paper, making him one of the world's 500 richest people.
You have to admit that God has a brilliant sense of humor. On the just the timing, consider the timing. They were, the regime media, they were salivating for over a week, waiting for yesterday, Monday. Monday was the day he had to come up with over $450 million. And then on that day, the bond, he gets a 10-day extension. The bond is slashed by 60%, and his net worth more than doubles. One of the 500 richest men in the world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us for today's program. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com. Also, at rumble.com, /Trumpet Daily. You know how it goes. It's the conversation continues over there, and the audience size is continuing to grow at Rumble as well, thanks in large part to the helpful promotions that they're giving us on Sundays. So if you'd like to email the show, you can reach us, td@thetrumpet.com. So much to get to. All of these seemingly random events as well. This barge just losing power, mysteriously losing power and ramming into this bridge in Baltimore and pretty much shutting down the harbor. And you've got people online already speculating, as they should be, about this being a cyber attack of some kind. How does it lose power and then ram right into a bridge? Well, we'll probably find out more details on this story. Yesterday, also, you might have read where the United States stabs Israel in the back yet again at the UN. Instead of vetoing this bill, calling on Israel to cease fire, to stop with this war that Hamas started. Has the UN even come out and condemned what Hamas did on October 7? Have they done that yet? Because they're ready to condemn Israel. They do it at a moment's notice. And here's America yesterday abstaining, instead of vetoing, abstaining from the vote. Prime Minister Netanyahu, he's just outraged. He should be. So as I say, you've got all these things happening. This rapper, I think he's got properties in California and Florida. Had his properties raided yesterday for evidently child sex trafficking. What a world we're living in. Just some really sickening stuff. You see Judah's wound. You see Israel's sickness through and through. What a time if you're an adversary to attack the United States, to hurt its economy even more now as it deals with this disaster in Baltimore. All of these things, so much of it, just go. It makes you wonder, by the way, America and Britain stabbing Israel in the back. if maybe that was something that Barack Obama, the dear leader, was discussing with the British Prime Minister, Britain voted for it. It's unbelievable. Hatred and animosity among these brother nations. And then you've got all this drama surrounding Donald Trump. I mean, this is how he's campaigning. He's going to all of these lawsuits, all of these courtrooms, and then he comes out like he did yesterday, and he speaks to the press for about 20 minutes. It's the only way they'll actually let him speak. If it's one of his official rallies, they blot it out. They don't show any of it on TV. They just take little snippets out of context. But as it is, because lawfare, it's supposed to destroy him, right? So he comes out of the courtroom and he gets his message across. Yeah, it's good messaging. This is a hoax. This is election interference. They are cheating. They can't win at the ballot box. So this is what they're trying to do. This is how they're trying to destroy me. And as I've been covering in the last several shows, how hilarious is it for them to go on and on about how poor Donald Trump is? He doesn't have any cash. The cash-strapped Trump, his wealth just doubled on the same day. You can't make this up. Bloomberg, Donald Trump's business empire was supposed to be in peril like never before on Monday. Instead, it turned into the single greatest day on record for the former president's wealth. You can't make this up. The timing is perfect. Like I said, it makes you appreciate God's sense of humor. God's intervening to save Israel, as it says in 2 Kings 14. And he's going to do it by the hand of Jeroboam. Instead of destroying him, it turned into the single greatest day on record for the former president's wealth. How about that? And simultaneously, you see heads exploding in the regime media. Listen to clip 6.
You know, honestly, this is so infuriating, I don't even know what to do. I don't even know if I care what the process is that these judges are arriving at. Whatever it is, it's flawed. I can tell you that much. I mean, David put it well. This is a different process for this person. We have decided that he gets his own private court of justice. He has a private plane. He has private clubs that he lives in. You know, apparently, you know, he basically fashioned himself his own private militia to try to take over the Capitol. You know, now he's getting his own private system of justice. This is an absolute travesty. It would not happen for anybody else. Anybody else, it would be like, sorry, buddy, you lost. Pay up. For him, he gets his own set of rules.
The system is rigged in favor of Trump. Right, got it. This guy's second home must be at Fantasy Island. I mean, he is living in another world. If he believes that the system is somehow helping and supporting Trump, this is Trump derangement syndrome right here. Mental illness. It really is demonic. You feel sorry for these people. They're every topic, every cocktail party they go to, every sandwich shop they go out with their colleagues to, you know what they're talking about. They can't get it off their minds. Donald Trump is living rent-free in their heads. And they're so obsessed with using the system to destroy Trump. That if they get one rule, just one, all it takes is an appellate level court to overturn it or just to reduce it. $175 million is crazy, but at least it's now doable for Donald Trump. He says he's got the cash. He said so outside the courtroom yesterday. He'd rather use it for the campaign. The judge is clearly trying to use up his cash, so he can't use it for that reason. The Hill says former President Trump is now one of the wealthiest people in the world after his media company, Truth Social, completed a merger that will see it debut on the stock market. Trump joined Bloomberg's list of the world's 500 richest people on Monday after the deal that could net him up to $4 billion was approved. It's the most money that Donald Trump has in his long and storied career as a real estate mogul. It's the most money that Donald Trump has ever made. How about that? It's like God's rubbing their noses in it. Listen to Morning Meltdown. This is clip 9.
I mean, he's been around and survived all of these incredible, weighty legal and political issues, and he's still here, still here, still a free man. I have no explanation for this, Joe.
I just can't understand how he's still a free man. And we've got 4 indictments, 91 felony counts, 700 years in prison at least. I just don't understand this. They don't understand. This is Jonathan Turley. It says, for most people, the $175 million bond is nothing to whistle away. But considering that Judge Engoron was insisting on $454 million and AG Letitia James was thrilling New Yorkers with pledges to go after iconic Trump properties, the smaller amount was a clear win for Donald Trump. Democrats lost their minds. One side announced rich men's privilege prevails and blamed undemocratic judges. AOC had previously warned that there is a risk in not seizing Trump's assets. It says here, the moment captured the strange universe in which we have found ourselves. Democratic prosecutors and politicians are piling on the fire and brimstone as Trump appears to be just warming up in his campaign. He just keeps going from one courtroom to the next, and his approval ratings go higher every time. It says the pile on of prosecutors does not set well with many voters outside places like Manhattan. Even those who do not like Trump have even greater dislike for the weaponization of the legal system. They know it's grossly unfair and unjust. And even people that don't like Donald Trump are coming around to support him. God has turned the tables on these demonic persecutors, really. It says here, the array of civil and criminal cases have Trump literally running from courthouse to courthouse, and Trump seems to be loving every minute of it. With every new indictment, Trump's popularity has increased. The lawfare just is not reaching the guy. He appears in his element. You listen to his speech yesterday outside the courtroom. It went on for 20 minutes. He took questions. It was pretty good. It was a pretty good campaign rally. It says here, the reduction of the bond could prove to be a case of the courts protecting Democrats from themselves. Pollsters have said that James's stated intention to seize Trump properties might guarantee his victory in November. So I think the appeals court probably did them a favor just to slow this up, this craziness, for her to actually go in there. I mean, Trump Tower right there in Manhattan, it's one of the nicest buildings in the nation. Look at what he's done. Play that clip from Jesse Waters as he basically just summarizes what Donald Trump has done for the skyline in New York. This is clip 5.
Hey, Jessica, you rent. Look at that building right there. Trump owns that building. Take a look at the entire Manhattan skyline.
Did you actually just say
that? Trump owns all of these beautiful properties. He's built these things. What has Joe Biden
built? He's put his name on a
bunch of things.
Joe Biden
has not built anything, Jessica. Whoa. He hasn't even built a charging station. Okay? This man is responsible for thousands of Americans being hired and millions of dollars being made by banks, by investors in this great city. These are hounds, Jessica. This is a savage attack on a man because these people are mentally ill. They don't want to see him actually convicted at all. They just want to see him convicted before the election. They don't care what happens after the election. That's the whole point of this. Joe Biden has unleashed the hounds, and Fannie's talking about the Fannie train. Come on. If you take the Trump train and the Fannie train and you go like this, my money's on the Trump train. Choo-choo, Fannie. Remember after 9/11, Jessica?
I do.
How we treated Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Your Democrat lawyers flew down to Gitmo to represent him. All they did was talk about, oh, they need constitutional rights. They need all of the rights that they should have, the right to appeal, the right to due process, the right to a trial. They're giving terrorists more respect than Donald Trump.
He's exactly right. They're giving the murderers, the rapists, terrorists more respect than this man that changed the skyline of Manhattan for the better, many would say. I mean, I'm not all skyscrapers everywhere. Certainly going to look a lot different in the world tomorrow. But as far as worldly cities go, you walk inside the Trump Tower in Manhattan, it's impressive. The quality, I mean, just the quality of his buildings. And so many of them, I mean, as he explained yesterday, he's paid a lot of them off. I mean, like I said on the program, this man is fabulously wealthy and he just got wealthier. He just doubled his portfolio, or at least his finances, because of his shares in Truth Social now. The timing is impeccable, isn't it? It says here, in the meantime, Manhattan Alvin Bragg is now set for a trial in April on his hush money case. It's based on a federal campaign finance violation that the Justice Department rejected, and even Bragg expressed reservations about when he came into office. But see, they've got to throw everything and the kitchen sink at him. Just hoping that something sticks. A campaign finance violation for hush money? Even the feds knew this was not a case to pursue. But leave it to Alvin Bragg. Leave it to Tish James. Leave it to Fannie. It says here, in a few weeks, Democrats hope to run up the heat further to get to Trump in Bragg's trial, which prominently featured two star witnesses, disbarred lawyer Michael Cohen and former porn star Stormy Daniels. There's your reputable witnesses. Get Trump. Says Cohen will appear just after another judge called him a perjurer who was continuing to game the system. Bragg is counting on a New York jury showing the same lack of interest in the underlying evidence as he has shown in the underlying law. See, just get a Get Trump jury in Manhattan or D.C. You can get plenty of them there. And then hope something happens before the election. Legally, these cases will say more about the integrity of the New York legal system than the law. Turley says right here at the end, I see little beyond politics, and the question of whether the appellate courts will regain a level of objectivity in reviewing their underlying theories. The shift in the polls over the last year is clearly found among voters who had previously rejected Trump. So far, at least, the expansion of the litigation seems to be leaving many voters cold. That may explain the whistling. They're coming around to the bad orange man. We've played some clips from the Shark Tank guy, Kevin O'Leary, who says that, hey, this is bad news for real estate developers. They're looking at what's happening in New York thinking, well, who's to say they won't come after me next? If I supposedly overvalue one of my properties as I try to secure a loan, it's not a good look for the world, for at least the way the world views the United States. Like O'Leary brings out here, I mean, who's going to invest in the United States if they know that something like this could happen, a communist takeover of the company, a seizure of assets? This is clip 7.
So this is very important, because if you're going to go over to the Middle East or to Denmark or Europe, where I'm going next week to raise money for American projects, notably data centers, when they give $3 billion to you, they want to know their property rights are protected. And so what was happening in New York was extremely scary. And I have to admit to you, in the last 2 weeks, I kept telling them before our meetings, don't worry, the adults will step in. Something will happen to advance the appellate process. Your rights are protected. Imagine me telling foreign investors that as they watch this roll out in New York. Thank goodness the adults came to the rescue. And now we have a process beginning, a 60%+ reduction in this infraction fee. And that really should be getting more to what's balanced. Trump assuring everybody he has the cash to back the bond. These are good advancements towards keeping the stable message about the American brand as the number one economy to invest in.
These people that say that Trump is the fraud, they're building the case based upon fraudulent narratives that they've established. Trump exposed that yesterday outside the courtroom. Listen to clip three.
We did nothing wrong, just like I did nothing wrong in the other case. My statements, my financial statements were conservative. They were low, not high. I mean, he valued Mar-a-Lago at a tiny fraction of what it is. He's the fraud. He created a fraud in order to help his narrative and her narrative, because he does whatever she wants. And the judge is really, what he's done is fraudulent. He made Mar-a-Lago, you know it very well, Maggie. He made Mar-a-Lago into $18 million. I had many offers. They said, I'll give you 19. Okay? You could take the half of the living room is worth more than that. So it's worth anywhere from 50 to 100 times that amount. And he stays with it. So he's either whacked out or dishonest. One or the other. Or both. Probably both.
Probably both. CNN confirmed what he said right there. Engoron said Mar-a-Lago is worth $18 million. CNN, just last week, estimated it to be worth $240 million. $240! You've got properties nearby going for $150 million, $200 million. He's in a pretty good position financially. Here's a bit more from Donald Trump yesterday, clip four.
Well, as they say, I have a lot of cash. You know I do because you looked at my statements. I mean, you've been examining my statements for a long time, and I have much more than that in cash. But I would also like to be able to use some of my cash to get elected. They don't want me to use my cash to get elected. They don't want that. They don't want me taking cash out to use it for the campaign. Then they looked at it, and this judge looked at it, and he's part of the whole deal. And, well, he's such a disgrace. But I have a lot of cash and a great company. I mean, to think they want to go after a company. This is a great company, a company that's doing very well. I've got very low debt on buildings like this building. I have very low debt on this building. Most buildings, I have no debt. Most clubs, I have no debt. Look at my greatest assets. I have no debt. I didn't even include, like, brand value. And the brand value is I became president because of the brand, let's say. I had very conservative statements. And the way they made him look bad is by valuing Mar-a-Lago at $18 million instead of what the real value is, which was at least 50 to maybe 100 times more. Think of that. This is the fraud. They're creating a fraud, and they're hurting the state so badly.
They're hurting New York. This is what Kevin O'Leary is concerned about. New York's reputation, Manhattan's reputation. But you look at some of the buildings this man has constructed over the years. And now that he's paid them off, and then he's got, as he says there, they all have the Trump brand. They have the name recognition. He's probably going to be able to get more. He doesn't even want to sell his properties. He doesn't want them seized either, illegally. So it's a judge, a corrupt judge who does whatever Letitia James says to do, coming in there saying, it's only worth $18 million. Donald Trump lied. He's a fraud. Well, the fraud just doubled his, he just doubled his wealth, his net worth, yesterday. Just over the weekend, leading right up to the Monday that he was supposed to be destroyed. You heard the cold open. His opponents politically, they have nothing to campaign on except get Trump. Laura Ingraham summarized that pretty well last night, clip 10.
Bottom line here, Democrats have no affirmative agenda to restore America. It's just lawfare, racial division, and of course, throw in some abortion fear-mongering. Of course, their guy can't be trusted to have a real press conference or do any non-friendly interview. No way. And of course, Joe won't or can't debate. How can he defend his border? He can't. How can he defend the chaos abroad? He can't. But no problem. His surrogates do all the heavy lifting for him, and they include the corporate media. Their mantra is simple. Trump is bad, and you're bad for wanting a bad man as president. And because he's bad and you're bad, we're justified in bending the legal and political system to make sure he doesn't even have the chance to be on the ballot come November. Oh, and of course, he's Hitler as well.
And they're champions of democracy, they keep saying. Trump's evil, and you're evil if you support him. That's what they're campaigning on. They know what's coming. They know that if the Trump train collides with Fannie's train, Trump's going to come out ahead. Trump's going to win in that collision. Listen to Steve Bannon from, I think this might be earlier today, clip two.
Dude, the lawfare is not working. We can see that. It's a major part of Trump's campaign. It's the reason, you know, Biden's got $2 billion. They're raising more money because they understand the day we take over, the day Trump walks into the Oval Office, we take over, we're taking this thing apart brick by brick. They're in total panic mode. They're not ready for Trump coming back more powerful and stronger than ever after what they did to him and what they're doing to him now and going back to Mar-a-Lago. They thought it was over.
They thought he would just cave in. They thought he would quit by now, and he won't quit. He talked yesterday about paying the $175 million bond and how he's excited to do it. He's excited to do it so that he can appeal this nonsense. He won't quit. That's what drives them crazy. He's supposed to be destroyed by now. Newt Gingrich, he had a piece. I'm not sure if this was at Real Clear, but he just talked about how that Donald Trump has, he's taken over the Republican Party. And you've got the old guard, you know, the Bush types, that are going off into retirement or that are secretly scheming and plotting to give control of the House over to Democrats. Gallagher resigns, Buck resigns, all these rhinos. They're finally beginning to disappear. Who's responsible for that? Gingrich says here, they yearn for a party which has disappeared. They advocate policies which are no longer realistic or viable. They are repelled by President Trump's aggressive style and his dramatic shifts in policy. They're rapidly becoming a fossilized reminder of a party which no longer exists and wants to operate in a world which no longer exists. It says, in short, traditional Republicans who wanted to be part of the establishment are being alienated by new Republicans who want to change that establishment. They want to change it. They're sick of the system. They're sick of the swamp. It says here, the traditional Republican leadership, largely the Bush wing of the party, came from Yale, Harvard, Princeton, and had similar pedigrees. They see themselves as governing within the right wing of the old order. It says they are naturally repelled by the boisterous, noisy emergence of a working-class Republican movement, which includes Latinos, African-Americans, and blue-collar whites. It doesn't help that the new Republicans want to shatter the old order, not join it. So, there's a lot of bitter people in the old guard. And as I say, a lot of them are scheming, along with the communist left, behind closed doors, anything and everything to get Trump. Trump's evil and you're evil if you support him. That's their agenda. I mentioned the backstabbing at the UN yesterday. U.S. allows the passage of UN resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, prompting retaliation from Israel. BB canceled. I guess a delegation was coming to visit the White House. He abruptly cancels it after the United States abstained in the vote and didn't stick up for Israel. There's a scathing rebuke coming from, I think it was the Israeli ambassador to the UN. As he said to the UN people, you know, how come you haven't condemned Hamas? You're condemning Israel, but you haven't condemned Hamas? This is outrageous. Israel's going it alone. Just like Melanie Phillips wrote. I'll come to that. Israel responded by canceling a visit this week by Israeli officials and top advisors. The passage of the resolution led and presented by the non-permanent members of the UN, the UN's most powerful body, comes after a series of resolutions addressing the Israel-Hamas war failed because of vetoes from the United States, China, and Russia because of disagreements over the phrasing of calls for a ceasefire. It says the decision of the U.S. to abstain rather than veto the resolution is also Washington's sharpest action to date at the United Nations against its ally. Yeah, Israel's supposed to be our ally. But now you've got America and you've got Britain. You've got them acting in opposition to Israel. And then the dear leader over there in the UK just a few days ago. The U.S. abstained from, this is from Sky News, the U.S. abstained from the vote with the 14 other council members, including Russia, China, and the U.K., voting in favor. The U.K. voted in favor. Now, the U.K. leadership, it's supposedly conservative, right? Who knows, as I say, what was going on in that discussion between Sunak and Obama. Sky News, again, it says, in a statement, Mr. Netanyahu's office said the U.S. did not veto the new text that calls for a ceasefire without the condition of releasing the abductees. And he called the American abstention a clear retreat. Well, that's just the way we're supposed to operate, right? Have more respect for the terrorists than you do Donald Trump or your Israeli ally. More respect for murderers than Bibi and Trump. How about that? Politico says, in recent weeks, after months of Netanyahu openly defying Biden's calls for restraint in Gaza, the president launched an unprecedented and very public pressure campaign. He slapped sanctions on Israeli settlers and settlements. He invited Netanyahu's chief rival, Benny Gantz, to the White House to meet with Vice President Kamala Harris. She studied maps, by the way. She studied maps enough to know that Israel needs to stop. Israel cannot go into Rafah. She actually said that. I had the clip yesterday. We just didn't have time to play it. He issued a National Security Council memo suggesting that military aid to Israel should be conditioned on the delivery of humanitarian aid. So there they are. Just a matter of routine. Make sure that Israel fights with one hand tied behind its back and keep funding Hamas. That's what it amounts to. Melanie Phillips, Israel alone, weep for America. Israel alone, you see the subtitle there. She says, in my article last week, I wrote that America was abandoning Israel. Today, the Biden administration wrote its name in the annals of infamy by openly joining the axis of evil against those defending civilization. Join the axis of evil and then get Trump. Get anything to get Trump at home. And then abroad, hey, we'll empower terrorists. We'll empower terrorist-sponsoring nations. Happens all the time. Had a steady diet of it for 8 years under Barack Obama. And then Donald Trump comes in there and, I mean, he authors the Abraham Accords. He moves the embassy to Jerusalem. Just things that the Bushies were talking about for years. And they never did follow through and act. Trump comes in and he acts on those policies that he campaigned on. And they hate him because of it. They hate him on both sides of the aisle. Well, at least some of those, the old guard are finally departing. They see what's happening. It says here the UN Security Council, this is Melanie Phillips, has passed a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, breaking with its historic policy by vetoing hostile resolutions at the UN to protect Israel against those working for its destruction and the defeat of the West. The U.S. abstained today, and so the resolution was passed. Really a shameful, despicable act on the part of Joe Bama. Just doing anything that it can to stab Israel in the back. It says here, both the U.S. and the U.K. are now aligned with the West's foes, Russia and China, against Israel, the sole defender of the West in the Middle East. What a disgrace. What a disgrace, she says. The resolution is obnoxious because it fails to condition a ceasefire on the release of the hostages, thus destroying the chances of the latter actually occurring. The UN can't even bring itself to say, hey, we'll call on Israel to stop firing, but listen, Hamas, you've got to release the hostages. They're still holding hostages. It's gone on for more than a half year. Don't twist Hamas's arm. No, no. Send in the humanitarian aid. Condition, I mean, make sure if Israel's going to have any kind of an advance or a special operation, it's got to be conditioned on humanitarian aid going in there to Hamas as well. How do you win a war like this? A war that Hamas started, backed by Iran, by the way. How do you win this with this kind of weakness? With it, it's worse than appeasement. It's you're in bed with the enemy. You're empowering the enemy. You're helping the enemy. Back in January of 2015, we had a trumpet cover, Israel versus the world. Israel's going up against the world. It's impossible, the position that it's in. No wonder the prophecies tell us that they're going to reach out to Assyria. Eventually, I mean, you can see these prophecies lining up. Because there's just no other options, are there? No other options available for Israel. They can't rely on American support. At least not with this administration. Israel versus the world. Brent Noctegal, he wrote at the Trumpet back in July of 2020. This is, almost 4 years ago. It says, 1 month before President Barack Obama left the White House, the United States infamously broke with its historic precedent of supporting Israel at the United Nations, an institution with systemic bias against the Jewish state. You remember that? That was right at the end of 2016. On the way out, the dear leader stabbed Israel in the back. It says here, collective applause erupted in the UN hall when U.S. Ambassador Samantha Powers raised her hand to allow passage of Resolution 2334, which called any Israeli settlement in the land occupied by Jordan before 1967 as illegal. According to the resolution, Israelis living in the Jewish quarter of the Old City in Jerusalem were criminal squatters. That's what Obama thinks of Israel. If the subject of Israel came up when he visited 10 Downing Street, you can be sure it sprung from this kind of a hatred and contempt for the Israeli state, the Jewish state. It says, by not vetoing the anti-Israel resolution, Israel's greatest ally chose to side with Israel bashers instead of the Jewish state. And that's what they did again yesterday. Side with the ones bashing Israel. Is this an upside down world? It certainly is. When the supporters of Hamas can take to the streets in London or wherever in the West. And we're sitting there clearing the way for them. Listen, you can take over our streets and tell us how much you hate Israel. And how Jews need to be murdered, and how that we should cheer on Hamas? You could do that right in our own country. And then meanwhile, we'll go to the UN, and we'll stab Israel in the back. Happened in 2016, happened again this week. Really, as Melanie Phillips says, just a disgrace. Just an absolute disgrace. Look at what's happening, not just to our nations, but just with this last piece I want to get into, just with what's going on around the world. And here, America's supposed to be the lone superpower. But the sickness, that's really what this guy gets into. Maybe we can take just a quick break. And when I come back, we'll go through this piece by Peter Zane over at Real Clear Politics, The Canaries in America's Coal Mine. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily News, Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
It's been a while since I've gone through those verses at the start of 2 Timothy 3. It seemed like for a while there I was bringing it up every other day. But this is the passage where Paul talks about the dangerous times that we're coming into, the last days, immediately before the return of Christ to this earth. He says, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy," it says, "without even natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good." Go after the ones that are good. Go after the ones that help you actually build up the heart of Manhattan. And then offer jobs to thousands and thousands of Americans. Go after them. And then appease the terrorists, the murderers, the rapists, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. We certainly see a lot of that in our society. Verse 5 says, "having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away." Turn away from that form of godliness. Turn away from that self-righteousness. Turn away from that hypocrisy and live the way of give. This article by Peter Zane, it's really about America's sickness. Isaiah 1, sick from top to bottom, head to toe. He just, basically the premise of the piece is that, look, it's easy to look at these two individuals, Joe Biden on the one hand, Donald Trump on the other, and to think that, well, Joe Obama's ruining the nation and Trump's got to come back and fix it. And of course, Donald Trump is pretty optimistic that he can do that. But the point that Zane makes is that, look, the sickness, it's so entrenched in our society. How are we going to fix these problems, even with a better president? He says in the Wall Street Journal commentary about post-COVID America, it says Yale University's Nicholas Christakis observes how reckless behavior is becoming epidemic. Americans gambled a record $66 billion in 2023. $66 billion! It says, compared with 2019, there's been an 18% increase in fatal accidents involving alcohol and 17% increase in those involving speeding. What's happening here? It's as if we're off the rails. These aren't, you know, political talking points we're talking about here. I mean, these are deep-seated problems, troubles, perilous troubles. Says here, Jonathan Haidt reports in The Atlantic that the rates of depression and anxiety in the United States, fairly stable in the 2000s, rose by more than 50% in many studies from 2010 to 2019. It says the suicide rate rose 48% for adolescents ages 10 to 19. For children, that, as another article brings out, and you're seeing more and more of this at Politico and elsewhere, now that we've had an entire generation addicted to smart devices, smartphones, we're beginning to see the overall impact. And it's easy to just blame the technology solely. There's a lot more to it than just that. Politico says it's hard to believe sometimes that smartphones and social media haven't been around forever, but for one generation they have. Gen Z doesn't know a time when they weren't ubiquitous. It says this cohort also happens to be the generation with the worst mental health in America. Is that a coincidence? As I say, there's other factors, but it certainly isn't helping. It's just all of these problems and troubles, they've just been made worse by what we have on our devices, what we're seeing on a daily basis. The way people treat one another. No natural affection. Just like it says in 2 Timothy 3. Back to this Zane article. It says a 2021 study by the Survey of on American Life found that 49% of Americans said they had fewer than three close friends. That's half of America that says they've got fewer than three close friends. How sad and pathetic. What are we doing to ourselves? What are we not doing? The New York Sun reports that many citizens are no longer part of the workforce. And then he says the liberal Vera Institute has reported that the number of women incarcerated in the United States has skyrocketed in the last four decades, increasing 475% in 40 years. Women, we're sending more women off to prison than ever before. Here's how he concludes. These are just some of the canaries in the American coal mine. Together they suggest how, despite the many strengths our nation still possesses, we are unraveling. The government cannot fix most of these problems, which may be why politicians largely ignore them. Such issues must be addressed at that most local of levels, the individual and the family. You see, how do you fix the family breakdown? Yes, there's been a communist infiltration and attack on everything that's traditional. The traditional family unit, for sure, and it's broken down because of it. But there's other factors too. God says it's our sins that has brought this on. We've got to look at ourselves in the mirror. God likens the Word of God to a spiritual mirror at the end of James 1. He wants for us to look into that mirror and to see what it is that we're doing wrong. What it is that we need to change. What it is we need to overcome. Zane says here, it may feel good to complain about the other guy for the next 8 months. And there's plenty of reason to, he says here. But after the November election, all of our problems will remain. It says it's long past time we recognized that much of the fault for our deep-rooted challenges lies not in our political stars, but in ourselves. I mean, he's exactly right. And we refer you to Isaiah 1 and Isaiah 3 often. We just went through a few verses in 2 Timothy 3. It's talking about us. It's describing us. It's describing our nations. In the last days, this is what it'll be like. Listen to this from Mr. Armstrong. This is a clip from one of his messages back in the 1980s, clip 11.
Now, it was not so long ago. There was an editorial in one of our largest news magazines, United States News and World Report. It said that it would seem that the only hope of survival of humanity now is the sudden appearance of a strong, unseen hand from someplace to intervene in world affairs and save us from ourselves. Let me tell you, we're very close to that time, and that very same thing is going to happen. But the eternal God, the Creator, is going to have to intervene, that strong hand from someplace, and is going to have to come and save us from ourselves and establish the government of God Almighty, the Creator. There will be perfect peace, there will be perfect government, and there will be at last perfect education. Think of that.
God's going to have to come and save us from ourselves. And you can read, look at Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. It says that if he doesn't cut it short, if he doesn't intervene with a strong hand, there'd be no flesh saved alive. Nobody left. This is where we're headed. That's from the Olivet prophecy. That's from Jesus Christ. People don't want to talk about that. They don't, like Zane said in his piece, they don't even want to address all of these sicknesses because you can't solve them. There's no hope in man, is there? The Bible tells us that our hope is in the great Creator God. Our hope is in the return of His Son to this earth and the establishment of God's kingdom, God's government on earth. A few emails to finish with here today. If you'd like to email the show, remember you can reach us, td@thetrumpet.com. One says here, it's good to hear truth, especially when you yourself can prove it's true. Keep up the excellent job. Really loved Monday's background behind Mr. Fleury. Another one says, I truly enjoy the new background for the TD. I find it refreshing to listen to the TD. It gives me more to pray about and to hear the facts, not the fake. It says, when the segment was shown about the deep state being kind of awesome, I literally cringed at their enthusiasm. How frightening to get so excited about this evil, evil chaos. And they do. They celebrate evil. And your Bible prophesies of that as well. We declare our sin as Sodom, and then we go after good. The people that are trying to do the right thing, they make themselves a prey, like it says in Isaiah 59. Meanwhile, we declare openly all the sins that we're so proud of. This one here says, I'd like to add to the many positive comments on Mr. Livingston's subbing for your show some weeks back. He brought much energy and held my attention quite well for the hour. A fresh voice is welcome, as my old ears sometimes tire easily. No offense to you, sir. By the way, Mr. Palmer also turned in another fine performance. I like the new backdrop. So we're getting mostly, not all, but mostly positive feedback on the new set, the new look anyway. This one here says, I love the new background, the original lovely too, however. The new one shines like a city on a hill, a light not hidden under a basket. It says, with truth and a foretaste of the wonderful world tomorrow. Another one says, we watch your program a lot, very informative. I think it would be helpful to call Obama the evil puppet master instead of the dear leader. Well, we'll see if we can work that in from time to time. But as they say, old habits die hard. This one here says, my husband and I watch every day. We had a good laugh watching you have a good laugh on the show today. That must have been in response to laughing at all of the talking heads saying that Donald Trump is poor and he doesn't have any cash. He's a poor man and he's unsuccessful. That's all we have time for on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on the program, and we'll see you again tomorrow.